is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is a Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, June 21st, 2023. And today will be better than yesterday. Sarah Abbott and Taylor Schwenk are working from back in Connecticut. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home in Montana. And guys, it's the 19th birthday for my son, Jake, who is such a good person. He developed into such a good guy. I've never heard him criticize another kid. Think about that. His whole life, I've never heard him say anything bad about anybody else. I'm just in awe of his great heart. Taylor, Sarah, how are you guys doing today?
Doing great, Buster. That's heartwarming to me that you have raised a child that you can be proud of where his head at and his ethics, his morals. But what do you think he's doing on it? He's home from college, so it's not like he's having an at college birthday. But what do you think he's doing that he's not telling you for his birthday? Anything?
He's playing video games till about four or 5 o'clock in the morning. And by the way, his favorite game is The Show. He absolutely loves that. And I can't remember. I don't know if we've talked about this in the podcast, but I actually have our friend Boog Shambi, the legend, during his school year, because this is a game that Jake plays all the time. And if I get a sense like Jake might be playing a little bit more than I would like as the dad who pays his tuition, I'll have Boog tape video notes to him. And he's like, hey, big man, it's Boog. You know what? I hear you might be playing a little too much video games. How about a little time spending on accounting? That sort of thing. You know, he's great about that. Someday when we have Boog on, I think I might play one of those for you guys.
Oh, yeah, that's hilarious. Cool dad move right there.
Well, and Jake loves it because, like, I'm an idiot to Jake, but, like, Boog Shambi is an actual star. And that gets him excited. All right. We heard from Perry Manassian, the general manager of the Angels, yesterday that the team is highly unlikely to trade Shohei Ohtani. This is not a shock. Manassian's quote, it's pretty self-explanatory with where we're at in the standings, that they are very unlikely to trade Ohtani. As of this morning, they're in a position to make the playoffs. Even after losing last night, Ohtani was hitless. His hit streak came to an end. The game was dominated by the Dodgers' Clayton Kershaw.
Season high 105. He's at 102 right now. Pitch 103 to Velasquez. Grounded to Miguel Rojas, who flips it to second. Kershaw out of the jam.
Yeah, so Clayton Kershaw was outstanding last night, and LA wins the game. The Reds continue to roll on. They now have a 10-game winning streak after they beat the Rockies yesterday 8-6. That's their longest winning streak since 2012. And, of course, Ellie De La Cruz had something to do with that.
De La Cruz opposite way. Profar back. Ellie De La Cruz opposite way for home run number two. It's a 4-1 game.
So I heard recently about how Ellie De La Cruz wrote in an autograph that he was the fastest player in the world. And there was a sequence during the Reds game yesterday where that was evident because he effectively caused a Rockies pitcher to make three errors in one inning. Like the Rockies are throwing the ball all over the place, trying to catch up with Ellie De La Cruz as he beats out an infield single, and then he steals second base, and then they try to pick him off at second, and instead he steals third and then runs home. It was a lot of fun. The Reds continue to be a lot of fun. We'll be talking about that with Jeff Passan coming up. The Red Sox and the Twins. Adam Duvall gave the Red Sox a lead in the top of the fourth.
1-1, crushed deep to center field. Back on it is Castro at the warning track. At the wall, gone! Adam Duvall launches his first home run since coming back off the injured list. It's a big fly to straightaway center field, and the Red Sox strike first. They lead it 1-0.
That from WEEI, the Red Sox went on to win 10-4, and Adam Duvall will be joining us later in the podcast. A great pitching matchup in Houston on Tuesday night. Astros and Mets, Justin Verlander for the Mets pitching against Framber Valdez, his former teammate. And in the bottom of the third inning, Alex Bregman went deep.
Here's the pitch. And that slug to left field, pretty high, and it's gone! Three rows deep into the Landry's Crawford boxes, a two-run jack for Bregman, and it's 3-0 Astros.
Houston on their way to a 4-2 win. That call from Sparksy, Steve Sparks, KBME 790 AM. He is a regular listener to the podcast, and we thank him for that. Guardians and the A's. We talked earlier this season about how the Guardians consistently improve under Terry Francona over the course of the 6-month season. And that seems to be the case again this year. They walked it off against Oakland in the bottom of the 10th.
Swung on, line to right field, down the line it goes. Fair ball, game winner, walk-off win number 4. Andrés Giménez with an RBI single down the right field line. They'll mob him out at second base, and Cleveland starts the homestand with a 3-2 win.
Sound from WTAM 1100. Orioles, Rays, and Aaron Hicks got the Orioles going in the top of the first.
Top of the first. Pitch on the way, well hit, deep down the right field line, way back, it is gone. Aaron Hicks dials it out. A 3-run shot, and the Orioles have put up 4 in the first.
That from WBAL, Baltimore wins that game 8-6, and Hicks's former team continues to have a need for outfield offense because Aaron Judge is still out. Now, Aaron Boone told reporters yesterday that Judge is improving. The quote is, "I'm encouraged by what I'm seeing. He's been slowly doing better and able to do more things, but we do feel like hopefully that was the start of him really starting to make real progress. He hasn't started baseball activities." I'll say it again. The Yankees would be thrilled if he came back before the All-Star break. Their offense has been a real issue in Judge's absence. Last night, they faced the Mariners, and Billy McKinney gave them an injection of power in the bottom of the second.
High drive, right field, going back, Hernandez, turning, looking, see ya! A 2-run home run for McKinney, and the Yankees are up 3-0.
That from Michael Kay and the Yes Network, and that was it for the Yankees offense. 3 runs. And that was enough because Gerrit Cole was dominant.
Swing and a miss. And he strikes out the side. He has a long look for Caballero. You can see he wanted no part of that all day. And now he's pointing at the Seattle dugout as well. Swing and a miss. 5 strikeouts in a row by the Yankee ace.
There's a reference there from Michael Kay was Gerrit Cole was having an issue with Caballero trying to slow down his timing and stepping out of the box and trying to delay the game. And Gerrit Cole threw a fastball over his head to the backstop, basically to send a message. And Scott Service, the manager of the Mariners, apparently was yelling at Cole as he went off the mound, wagging a finger, and Cole wagged his finger back. Here was Cole after the game explaining the back and forth.
Kind of every day we see you pointing at the other dugout and kind of shaking the finger there.
Yeah, you know, their manager had some choice words for me coming off the field, and he was wagging his finger at me, so I wagged my finger at him.
A strange ending to the game between the White Sox and the Rangers. It was 6-6, and then this happened.
Swing and a base hit to left. Elvis coming around third. The throw by Jankowski is in time. They got him. We'll see if Pedro wants to challenge it, and he's already made the call. He's not even going to ask the video room. It was a bang-bang play. The Rangers are walking off the field. They're convinced that he was out.
That was Len Casper on ESPN 1000. Yes, not only the White Sox challenged a safer out call, but they also challenged whether or not Jonah Heim, the catcher for the Rangers, was blocking home plate. And this is what happened.
After review, the call on the field is overturned to a violation. Woo! Violation. The run will score. The batter will stay at second.
Bruce Bochy's livid, but he can't argue it. So they're calling Heim for violating the blocking rule, and the White Sox lead this game.
Yeah, I was wrong. It wasn't a walk-off. It was in the bottom of the 8th. But the White Sox held on to beat Texas 7-6. And after the game, Bruce Bochy did not mince words.
Those guys, I mean, they're not making a call. I get that. I just wanted to get clarification on exactly what was called. I couldn't hear. And for that call to be made, I'm dumbfounded. It's absolutely one of the worst calls I've ever seen. And it was done by replay. I just don't get it. I don't care how many times they'll try to explain it. You can't do that in that situation. It's a shame. It's embarrassing, really.
You thought he had a clear lane to the play. What did you see on the play?
Yeah, there was never any contact with the catcher. It was a sweep tag. I don't get it. I really don't. I'm just, again, I'm shocked. Jonah did a great job there. The throw took him to the left a little bit. Sweep tag. I'm lost on this one. That's a tough one to take.
And that was after Bruce Bochy saw a replay. Now, I got some information from Major League Baseball. We're going to share that with Jeff Passan coming up. Taylor, what else you got?
Buster, the Hoop Collective has a new episode out today talking to the newest Washington Wizard, Chris Paul. I'm sure he's thrilled about what has happened in his life. And, he can listen to Brian Windhorst, ask him about that, and his brand new book about his relationship with his grandfather. I was talking to Jackson Jello, who produces that show. Sounds like a great interview. Check it out. The Hoop Collective with Brian Windhorst, interview with Chris Paul. You can listen to that wherever you're listening to this podcast right now or on YouTube.
We're driven by the search for better. When it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Dogs are an important part of our lives, and keeping them protected is a top priority, especially against nasty parasites. That's why you got to check out NexGard Plus, Afoxolaner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection that kills fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease. Plus, it treats and controls roundworms and hookworms. That's a whole lot of protection packed into a delicious, beef-flavored, soft chew designed to make monthly dosing easy and enjoyable. So the next time you're at the vet, ask about NexGard Plus Chews. They're the one-and-done monthly parasite protection you want for your dog. Used with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting preventive.
Jeff Passan covers baseball for ESPN. Jeff, where are you today?
I am in lovely suburban Kansas City right now, Buster.
Very nice. Well, you're not in London. You're not in Omaha. So that's great. You get to be home, because I know your life is going to be really crazy coming up with the draft coming up, with the All-Star events, and then the trade deadline after that. You and I will be faint whispers with our families for a period of time.
I'm really going to miss... So of course, my wife and child, but my dog, like the dog gets more excited to see me when I come home after a long trip than anyone, which I don't know what that says about me, or maybe it just says I have a great dog.
No, it means that your kids are on the same trajectory as every other kid. Right. And I'll just give you a warning, because my son actually turns 19 today. My daughter's 23. It only gets worse, Jeff. And then when they get to about 22, that's when they begin to veer out of it. Like, oh, you know, my parents aren't that bad.
He's okay, actually. Turns out right. That he wasn't the worst.
Exactly. All right. I want to start with that call that ended the game between the White Sox and the Rangers last night, which left Bruce Bochy out there at home plate. You could see that he was a little bit torn, because he's arguing with the umpires who are on the field, knowing that the call was actually made back in New York, and he was just totally perplexed. I mean, this is someone, Jeff, who is at the heart of the change of the home plate collision rules because he was managed Buster Posey. And after the game, he talked about how it was just a terrible call in his eyes. And, you know, I got some information from Major League Baseball this morning. This is what I, you know, received from them. The replay official was Ryan Blakeney. And after reviewing all relevant angles, the replay official definitively determined the catcher was in violation of the home plate collision rule. The catcher's initial positioning was illegal, and his subsequent actions, while not in possession of the ball, hindered and impeded the runner's path to home plate. The call, of course, was overturned. And Jeff, I got to say, I think it might be one of the worst calls I've ever seen since covering baseball because it was done through replay. I don't know how you can watch that play through replay and land there. What about you?
Well, sir, I look at the interpretation of rules like this as being a very technocratic thing for a very technocratic group of people. Like umpires, if you give umpires something that has nuance in it, they struggle with nuance. It's a black and white job. It's a ball or a strike. It's safe or out. And in this case, the nuance to me was very simple. It was the view from down the third baseline toward home plate where Jonah Heim was standing, where you, me, and anybody else who has vision could see a large chunk of home plate readily available for Elvis Andrews to touch. Like if Elvis Andrews wanted to go in foot first, he could have hit that and would not have touched Jonah Heim. He went in head first and did not touch Jonah Heim. It was a terrible call. And Bruce Bochy, who not only managed Buster Posey when this rule got put into place, but also was a catcher himself for a decade plus in the big leagues, knows what should and should be right at that position better than anybody. And umpires sometimes just need to have feel, man. And Ryan Blakeney had no feel in this situation because this was much more a letter of the law call than it was a spirit of the law. And in this case, you need to abide by the spirit of the law, which is that if Jonah Heim doesn't give Elvis Andrus anything to slide into, yeah, you can call a violation there, but where he was positioned and what it looked like, the only thing I could think of is that Elvis Andrus had to change his path. If you look, he does sort of a little Euro step to go on the inside of home plate as opposed to the outside when he was winding the path around third base. And for that, in that situation, no less, to be the call, it was a mockery of the rule.
Yeah. At no point was Jonah Heim's foot or knee in front of home plate. There was always a place to which Elvis Andrus would have had access. Yep. I always love to hear from the fans' perspective. Taylor, Sarah, you guys love to hear your perspective on this when you saw the replay.
It was wrong, Buster. They did a bad job. Not great. Not a great night for the umpires. It's unfortunate, too. I mean, I feel like the umpires are getting a... a raw deal is the way to put it, but they're catching a lot of flack for bad calls, bad strike zones, a lot of people, you know, demanding accountability. You know, I don't know how that is resolved, but you know, it hasn't been a great year for umpires.
I would disagree with you. I think it's probably been more of a typical year. Like we focus a lot on calls like this, and that might take some tension away. I actually think the young umpires do a great job on balls and strikes. Sarah, what do you think?
Tough, very, very tough call, tough look. And like Taylor mentioned, this year's already been rough for umpires, and this definitely did not help.
All right. Yesterday, Jeff, we heard from Perry Manassian, general manager for the Angels, sang out loud, which I think we all knew from the time that Artie Moreno did that interview with Sports Illustrated in spring training and said, look, if we're in contention, we're not going to trade Ohtani. And not only they're in contention and maybe have the best chance to make the playoffs since 2014, but as of this morning, they actually would make the playoffs. They're right in the mix with a flawed Yankee team struggling without Aaron Judge, a flawed Astros team struggling without Yordan Alvarez. And I think, you know, as we get close to the deadline, when we talk about teams looking to upgrade, I would expect that the Angels might be one of the most aggressive teams in trying to add and trying to make the playoffs. What'd you make of all that from Perry yesterday?
Let's not forget, Buster, this is a flawed Angels team too. So yeah, it's not like we're talking about a world beater here, but I think your instincts are absolutely correct. And here's why, because Perry Manassian has been running this team all season long with the sort of sense of urgency that I think fan bases would love from their general manager and owner. Zach Neto being called up after like 50 games in the minor leagues. You know, you don't see somebody make the ascent as quickly as Zach Neto did, followed by Ben Joyce, who's now hurt, but Ben Joyce jumping up from Double A, where he was aggressively promoted to begin with. And it seems like almost everything the Angels have been doing over the last year plus has been positioned towards saying to Shohei Ohtani, don't forget us. We're still here. Like, I know we've been terrible every year since you've been in the United States and in Major League Baseball, but we're trying. And the way that they're trying and the way that they're succeeding this season, Buster, it's really interesting. The big strength of the Los Angeles Angels, especially lately, has been their bullpen. Like, Carlos Estevez is having a spectacular borderline all-star year. Matt Moore has been a fantastic free agent signing. Another reliever who's done well, who got promoted pretty aggressively, Sam Bachman, and you know, Jacob Webb has been kind of a revelation in his short stints. The Angels right now are doing their very best to say to Shohei Ohtani, hey, we may not have the pedigree of the Dodgers, we may not have the money of the Mets, but what we have for you is home. And what we're showing you is that winning matters to us too, even if we haven't done a whole lot of it in the last half decade.
I was on the radio show this morning and they asked me the chances that Ohtani returns the Angels as a free agent. And I know what they wanted to hear was zero. Like, he's definitely signing with the other teams, Jeff. But you know, and I know that folks within that organization talk about, and folks who know Ohtani talk about how he's a creature of habit.
Yeah.
Right. He lives in a place that's the closest to the ballpark. He walks to the ballpark on a daily basis. And if the Angels demonstrate they can be competitive and they're in the same stratosphere financially to what the Mets or the Padres or the Dodgers offer, I'm not ruling it out because he's already shocked us once with his choices.
And if we look at history, Buster, and I think this is a really important contextual point for what's about to come this winter. We look at history, Shohei Ohtani could have waited until he was 25 years old to come to MLB. He originally signed for pennies, you know, a couple million dollars. If he had just waited 2 years, you could have multiplied that by 100 and he would have gotten that. So that's instance number one in which money wasn't the greatest priority. Instance number two, his first time through arbitration, he signed a 2-year deal and lost a ton of money. Granted, he was coming off a bad year, so maybe the instinct was there. But even this past year, rather than go into the arbitration system and challenge the record, you know, not just beating the record for a single season, but absolutely smashing it, he signed a $30 million deal, which is a lot of money, which is the biggest raise ever, which is all sorts of wonderful things for him. But it's not what it could have been financially. So he has demonstrated a pattern that says not that money isn't important, just that it's not the most important. And I think he's, you know, he's a pretty hard guy to read. But when you see a pattern like that, you can't discount it.
And I think you would agree with me on this. He's got an autonomy within the Angels organization.
Yes.
That he is not going to have any place else. If he signs with the, you know, with the Dodgers, You know, they've got Freddie Freeman, they've got Mookie Betts, they've got other stars on that team. They're not going to constantly defer to Ohtani in the way that the Angels do.
The only thing I could think there is usually when it's trouble that guys are getting preferential treatment, they're not as good as Shohei Ohtani. So right. if you're Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman and you're told, hey, Shohei needs to do this in order to be ready for the game, in order to play, in order to stay healthy, you almost have to be like, okay, Shohei can do whatever he wants. He deserves his own set of rules because he has created his own position in this modern game.
Yeah. And I was going to mention, too, he certainly would not get that in New York because of the media.
No, he would not.
There would not be. They would not. The New York media would make a huge deal. I know this having from work there for years. If Ohtani did not make himself available in the way that he doesn't out in Anaheim, it would be a big deal and it would be a big story. And if he was struggling, it would become a thing. So it would be completely different. All right. So the Cincinnati Reds last night, they win again. To me, it's really strange to say. I think they're the easiest choice among the, you know, this in the six divisions of who's going to come through it. The way they're playing, the energy level, and I know you saw them recently.
You don't think Atlanta?
No, I still think there might be a run from the Phillies. I don't see a team in the National League Central that could keep pace with the Reds.
That's interesting. Have you seen the Reds starting pitching?
Yeah.
Like that's the only, and have you seen the Reds bullpen actually? Like when they were in town, I was like, you know, I was talking with someone with the organization. It's like, beyond Alexis Diaz, like who do I need to keep an eye on in the bullpen? And when the answer is Buck Farmer, and listen, Buck Farmer's having a really good year, but if Buck Farmer is your second best reliever, you need bullpen help. And it, you know, there might be an argument right now, Buster, that, yeah, I mean, is Andrew Abbott the Reds' best pitcher right now? I know he's had all of two starts in the big leagues, but
yeah.
Hunter Green's numbers are pretty, but you know, he's a 5-inning starter. There's just, you know, like Nick Lodolo's hurt and gave up 10 home runs, I think, in 30 innings. Like there are, you know, there are weaknesses with this Reds team, too, where I'm not going to anoint them yet. But I will say this. That clubhouse has really good energy. And I'm not sitting here trying to be mystical or spiritual or saying that there were all sorts of chakra crystals floating around the place that make it great. You just know when there's a group of young players together, that feeling that they give off when they're starting to understand that they can do this at the big league level. That's what the Reds have. And they have a ton of talent on the offensive side. And did you happen to catch Joey Votto's post-game conversation with Scott Van Pelt?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
It was awesome, and I think speaks to who Joey Votto is and what he means to this organization. And even he is excited about Ellie De La Cruz and Matt McClain and Spencer Steer. Like the rookies that are on this team, we have a chance to look back, Buster, at this season and see this as like one of the all-time great groups of rookies. I really do think that. I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say that, because it's just a ton of position-playing talent that Nick Kroll and Sam Grossman in Cincinnati have put together. And it's awesome to behold because they are all so talented and such different players. And yet they're melding together, and in a very, 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 but not as weak as the AL Central, weak NL Central division, they 100% they could win it. I don't think they're going to run away with it, though, unless they add pitching.
It's apples to oranges to some degree because of the experience of the roster, but the Reds remind me a little bit of the Phillies, you know, in the postseason last year with this great collective feel.
The Reds remind me of the Orioles. That's what I see when I look at them, because they have all this young position playing talent and, okay, what are we going to do about the pitching? Like, where is that going to come from?
And Joey Votto, in his first game back, he reminded me of Albert last year. Like, we just assumed Albert with the Cardinals was going to be like this little part-time fringy player. And by the end, the energy of that team lifted Albert up, and he responded to that. We got about 4 minutes left. I want to ask you, I started work on a piece I'm going to file later today about the Yankees and their need for offensive help. Just calling around yesterday, a lot of confirmation of what we expect before the deadline. There are not a lot of players available right now. And part of that is because the mediocrity of the Central divisions, right? If you're the Chicago White Sox, there's no reason why you would declare yourself right now as a seller. If you're in the National League Central, there's not a reason at the moment, if you're the Cubs, to declare yourself as a seller. Yeah. So I don't think there are a lot of opportunities for the Yankees to go and get David Justice, like as they did in 2000.
100%. You're absolutely right. Let's just go division by division here. Every team in the AL Central is at least four games over 500. None of them are selling right now. American League Central, every team is under 500. But the White Sox, at 11 games under 500, are only 4.5 back. The Tigers, at 10 games under 500, are only 4 back. These are teams with the worst, some of the worst run differentials in baseball. And they're right there in this abomination of a division. Even in the American League West, a team like Seattle came into this year with enormous hopes of contending. Are they really going to punt? Maybe, but I think it's going to take a while for that to happen, for them to say so. The National League East, the team that's in fourth place right now, is the most expensive team in the history of baseball. Would the Mets really deign to sell? The Phillies were in the World Series last year. Like, they were two games away from winning. Are they really going to sell? No, probably not. And then we go to the NL Central. And I mean, it's just like you said, the Cardinals are in last place. They have stunk until recently, when maybe they figured it out. And if they figured a little something out, then, you know, they're only eight games back. It's like the only teams right now, Buster, you can say definitively are selling are the Colorado Rockies, the Washington Nationals, the Oakland A's, and the Kansas City Royals. 4 of 30. That's bonkers that we don't have more clarity right now than that.
So a name that I did, in talking with executives of other teams, sort of dig out is an intriguing name when we talk about the Yankees, is that of Cody Bellinger. And I'm curious about your thoughts on this. Look, the Cubs, remember, their standard is not just to make the playoffs. Their standard, I think, is their bar has been raised because they won the World Series in 2016. Jed Hoyer, head of baseball operations, he's creative. And I look at them with Cody Bellinger, where they could basically take him out of the marketplace because they do have some surplus among their outfielders. He signed on a one-year deal, and they can say, look, we can give him a qualifying offer, which seems like a slam dunk given how he's performed so far this year. Mm-hmm. We can give him a qualifying offer, and if somebody is willing to give us more than that, then, you know what, we'll listen. And I think for the Yankees, he'd be an interesting guy. Because of his experience, because you know that, you know, Brian Cashman values defense in the outfield. But to me, the Yankees, if they can do something like that, they need to. Because it's pretty clear, without Aaron Judge in the field, and they really have no idea when he's going to come back, they need some help. What do you think?
Let me tell you, Buster, the Yankees have a great recent history of trading for outfielders at the deadline. Joey Gallo, Andrew Benintendi, like, it. They almost deserve for one to go right because the other two have gone so wrong recently.
I
think Cody Bellinger's defense is magnificent. And the fact that you could potentially see him in an outfield with Harrison Bader and Aaron Judge, that's one hell of a defensive outfield. But I just don't know if the Yankees need to add more strikeouts to the lineup. And Cody Bellinger still does that a lot, but it's almost like when you're shopping, you know, from like, let's say you go to the farmer's market, you know, you go to a farmer's market that has 30 stands and You feel good. You can go around. You can compare vegetables. You can look for the ones that look the best. When you're shopping at a farmer's market with four sad carts that just have like rotten produce on them, and you find like one nice tomato that doesn't have a black spot on it, you'll pay like $20 for that tomato. And Cody Bellinger might be that tomato right now.
All right. I did not expect you to go to a farmer's market comparison, but that definitely something that I can relate to. All right, Jeff, thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me, Buster. Appreciate it.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
The NFL schedule drops this week, and you can be there to catch all the action live and in person with Vivid Seats. Experience every touchdown, every tackle, and every eye-popping play of your favorite team. And to kick it off, Vivid Seats, the official ticketing partner of ESPN, is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Download the app or visit VividSeats.com today. That's VividSeats.com today, code BASEBALL. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter, producer for MLB.com and also the star of MLB Network this week because they're covering the draft combine. Sarah, what's that like?
I'm not the star. Hello, Buster. Thank you for having me. But it's wonderful. We're out here in Phoenix and we get to see all the future stars. They're doing drills on the field, taking BP, throwing bullpen. It's a great atmosphere, and it's so much fun to see these kids. I mean, you know, some of them are adults already, college kids, what have you, but it's great to see them so eager and so talented. So it's really, really fun.
So give me a StatCast metric that has been generated in this that jumped out at you. You're like, whoa, you know, keep an eye on this guy.
Absolutely. So Kemp Alderman, who is a Ole Miss baseball player, hit a ball 111.4 miles an hour off the bat yesterday, 443 feet into the stands there at Chase Field. And that was like, oh my goodness. But then, of course, he was interviewed after it, and he had a home run during the season that was tracked at like 486 feet. So 443, wow. It's kind of chump change for him, but that definitely stood out. That was the furthest ball we saw on Tuesday and the hardest hit ball. So that was really cool to see. And he had a couple others that were also pretty hard hit and far. And that's kind of my job on the broadcast, is to put some context to all the numbers, because it's awesome. We have these guys taking BP and throwing bullpens, and their StatCast going. But there's so many numbers, as you know, that doesn't mean that they're all digestible right in the moment. So my job is to kind of pick out which ones really matter and explain the context, how they relate to MLB, and what we should be looking out for.
So two quick follow-up questions on that. One, when is the next time that you're going to be on the show, or what time does the show begin? And second one, do you, as part of your contract with MLB Network, get your own trailer, okay, and demand, like, have food, a list of food demands?
Oh my goodness. I'm going to answer the second one first. Absolutely not. There are no demands. There's absolutely nothing, but they're all wonderful. And it's great to be here. And to the first question, we're on air today, Wednesday, 3:30 Eastern, 12:30 out here Pacific time, Mountain time. And yeah, should be really fun. We've got a 3-hour show. Plenty of pitchers and hitters, and also some really, really fun interviews. I'm so impressed by all of these players. That is actually my biggest takeaway from all of this. And then keep turning to Jimmy Hollis, who does prospect work for us at MLB.com. Even we had a 17-year-old shortstop on the main set yesterday, and he was talking. Harold Reynolds compared him to Francisco Lindor in the way that he did media, in the way that he spoke. It is so impressive how well-spoken these players are. So tune in if you have time. It's really fun.
Oh, I'm sure you're having an absolute blast, and I'm sure your mom is having an absolute blast because the Giants are rolling. Yesterday I did a show, Sarah, and they asked me about who's going to win the National League West. And I was like, look, I can go back and forth. I could argue the Diamondbacks because they're so athletic. You could argue the Dodgers because the recent pedigree, the assumption they'll probably make trades before the deadline. But the Giants, to me, are an intriguing pick because they might have the most stability of any of those three teams. How's your mom feeling?
She's feeling good. I mean, it's amazing. I texted her after the Dodgers sweep, and I said, how are you feeling? And I got a list of 9 issues she still had with the team. And I believe one of those texts involved wanting Juan Marichal to come back and join the rotation. She has some questions about pitching depth, which I agree with. But I do think they've shown a really good never-say-die attitude lately. They have won games, I mean, going back to their series in St. Louis recently, where they were down to their final strike, trailing by multiple runs. And so the fact that they have that belief seems to me really, really good.
All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three
is 12. So speaking of the Giants and that never say die attitude, yesterday, Tuesday, was their 12th comeback win when trailing by multiple runs this season. That matches their total of comeback wins when trailing by at least 2 runs from all of 2022. They have won so many games where they have trailed by 2, by 3, by 4. It really doesn't seem to matter. And that is just kind of an intangible that we see with teams sometimes. And they have really had that grow over these last few weeks. So certainly something to keep an eye on in that NL West.
Number two
is 64. So yesterday, Clayton Kershaw recorded his 64th career scoreless start of at least 7 innings. That broke a tie with Don Sutton for the most by any Dodger since 1900. And what's really stands out to me is that he didn't just throw 7 scoreless. He threw 7 scoreless with that 7th inning being really tenuous. He had runners on, nobody out, and he got out of it without allowing a run. That was the Juan Toribio, who covers the Dodgers for MLB.com, tweeted that was the I'm a Hall of Famer kind of inning. I believe he had first and second, nobody out, nobody scored. And it was that moment Dave Roberts had that belief in him. You knew he wasn't going to get him. I'm sitting here waiting to tweet this, that, thinking, is it going to happen? Did I jinx it by typing it up? And he, lo and behold, he gets out of it and he has his scoreless start. So that was vintage Kershaw.
Number one.
Number one is 975. That's Corbin Carroll's OPS. So that's third in the majors behind only Shohei Ohtani and Yordan Alvarez. So he leads the National League. Listen to this. Only one rookie has led his league in OPS since 1900. It was Fred Lynn in 1975 when he became the first player to win Rookie of the Year and MVP in the same season. And I know Ronald Acuna Jr. far and away the NL MVP right now. Freddie Freeman probably number two. But to me, Corbin Carroll is the obvious number three right now. And the fact that this rookie, if the season ended today, would obviously win Rookie of the Year and then be top three in MVP is really, really impressive. And you never know as the season goes along, but he has been so outstanding for the Diamondbacks.
All right, Sarah, before you go, I was talking with Jeff about how with the trade market, the way it's developing, all the, you know, all the teams in the Centrals, the American League, National League, are so mediocre that it's going to limit the number of sellers, at least for a while. And my idea is, I talked about what the Yankees might be able to do to sort of jumpstart their offense. I think they should call the Cubs about Cody Bellinger, who's on a one-year contract. You'd have to, in making a trade offer to the Cubs, you'd have to offset the value of the qualifying offer that they would get, you know, if they keep Bellinger through the whole year. But I feel like that his experience is, and his defense and his power potential in Yankee Stadium is enough where I would take a shot at that. Because I right now, when I watch their offense, it just seems so moribund. Like, it just, I think they're going to need some help, especially because they don't know when Judge is going to come back. Are you co-signing, or are you thinking he's too much like Joey Gallo for the Yankees to be aggressive?
Well, At my heart of hearts, I'm a romantic about baseball. So the idea of a father and son playing for the same team always stands out to me. The fact that he could, where his father, Clay Bellinger, played, automatically I'm in. This also sounds to me a little bit like when the Cubs signed Jock Peterson back in 2021 and ended up trading him to the Braves. He goes on to win the World Series with them. So I think it makes plenty of sense. And again, I don't know if it's, obviously there's similarities to Joey Gallo with the swing and miss, but Cody Bellinger is a former MVP. We know that he has that potential there. So I think he's a player very much worth taking a chance on. And he did look really good in those first few weeks of the season before he got injured. So I think it's worth doing. I think that would be a really good fit. And I agree about the Yankees offense. I mean, we were texting about it, I guess, on Sunday with our game, but as of then, it was almost a run and a half difference with Judge in the lineup versus not this season for the Yankees. So I do think they'll have to do something. And I agree that the trade market is going to be very interesting. I mean, you know, the Reds have won 10 in a row and they didn't even get a number in the numbers game. I'll wait till they're at 11 or 12. But that changes everything. And I think the Cubs could be a team that could end up selling with a guy like Bellinger.
Yeah, strategically selling. And certainly having conversations with other teams as well about Marcus Stroman, about the Yankees with Judge in the lineup this year, 5.0 runs per game. Without, including last night's game, they're down to 3.4 runs per game. You know, it's pretty ugly. All right, Sarah, we'll talk to you on Friday.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
Adam Duvall is an outfielder with the Boston Red Sox, and he's teaming up with the American Diabetes Association and Lilly to launch a nationwide effort that aims to increase awareness of insulin affordability solutions for all people living with diabetes. And Adam, you were diagnosed back in 2012. This is a couple of years after you were drafted professionally. Tell me what, when you first got this information, you know, what your reaction was. I mean, how difficult was that?
Yeah. You know, it was at first it was a punch in the face. You know, I really wasn't aware of, you know, what it was and the you know, the different things that come along with it. So I was in the middle of an off season where I felt, you know, really good going into it. And then I started losing a bunch of weight. I lost a bunch of energy. You know, I was having to wake up at nighttime to go pee all the time and had really dry cotton mouth. And, you know, those were a lot of symptoms for diabetes that I just wasn't aware of. So, you know, ended up getting to spring training, having some blood tests run, and, you know, my A1C levels were elevated. So that was kind of the kickoff as being a type 1 diabetic. So, but from there, it was more so, okay, how am I going to deal with this? You know, one, just on a daily basis, but two, how am I going to succeed throughout a season? And so it was a lot of, there was a big learning curve. It was a lot of, you know, learning how to count carbs, you know, learning how to deal with it on a daily basis, and just going forward with that.
Based on the information you got like right away, how concerned were you that it was going to affect, you know, what playing baseball?
It, for whatever reason, I wasn't really concerned with that aspect. My mindset was, okay, I just need to learn as much as I can about it. And for whatever reason, I felt like I would be able to deal with it. You know, maybe I didn't know how serious it was, but it was, my mindset was, okay, how can I deal with it? What can I do so that I can succeed on the field? And, you know, I had a lot of help from trainers and strength coaches and, you know, kind of tailoring my workouts and my meal plans and different things like that. So obviously I had a lot of help from those people.
So how do you manage it now? That's, you know, more than 10 years ago when you were diagnosed. On a day-to-day basis, how does it impact what you do and how you schedule your day?
Yeah. So, now I deal with it a little different now than I did then. As far as, you know, I have a pump, and a CGM now. So I was on shots back then, but, you know, just relying on that, obviously relying on the team around me, which strength coaches, trainers, you know, the meal prep team, and, you know, all of those resources I try and lean on to, you know, help me on a daily basis. There's certain foods that I can't eat before a game, that, you know, kind of spike my insulin level or my blood sugar levels. And then I end up crashing. So those are the types of things that I try and communicate with the team, and, you know, they help me out, you know, a ton.
So tell me about this initiative you're doing, Tap the Cap. What details can you give?
Yeah. So, I'm super excited about this. Obviously living with diabetes and dealing with having to get insulin. It's super important for me to try and spread this word and spread the awareness. I'm partnering with Lilly, in an effort to increase awareness of insulin affordability. And we're doing a campaign right now. It's hashtag Tap the Cap. You can find the filter on Instagram and Facebook, and, you know, it's a fun way to help spread the word. And, you know, I encourage those even without diabetes to get on there and, you know, have fun with it, because there's a good chance that someone, you know, or someone that's going to see it will have diabetes, and they just may need that, that program. So, you know, it's dear to my heart, and, you know, I'm excited to be partnering with Lilly.
So tell me about, I'm sure that during your time in the big leagues, you run across a kid, a family, you know, a family where they know your background in having diabetes, that it really connected with you, you know, that conversation where maybe because of your situation, you helped lend more information, more hope for that family, for that kid.
Yeah. So, you know, I talk about one of the most gratifying things that I get out of baseball, is, when I see a kid at the field in the stands with diabetes, and, something cool that we do, you know, they'll pull out their pump or, you know, show me their CGM, and I'll pull out my pump. And it's kind of a fun way to, you know, kind of, be on a more personal level with especially kids. It really, you know, having two kids of my own, it really touches my heart because I want to be a good role model for them. And, you know, I think it's important that kids see, you know, people at the highest level that they can, you know, that they can do that and they can achieve, you know, whatever it is they want to achieve, and get to the highest level, wherever they want to get to. And, you know, for that, it's important for me to, you know, for them to see that and to be able to connect to them on that level.
What type of questions will kids give you?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it's like, you know, what do you eat pregame? You know, how do you, you know, how do you deal with it? You know, traveling, different time zones. And, you know, those are the types of questions. It's, you know, I think it's just fun for them to be able to interact with someone that's dealing with the same thing. And, you know, I always tell them I know this isn't easy. I know what you're going through. I know, it's 24/7, diabetes never shuts off. So, you know, it's definitely cool to be able to interact with those kids.
All right. A few baseball questions before you go. If a team gets off to a slow start in April and May, you know, idiots like me will say, well, that team is done. And maybe are they going to trade? Are they going to buy? Are they going to sell? We love to jump on those stories early, but you lived it with the Braves in 2021, and we saw with the Phillies in 2022, where they were in the hole, the Nationals in 2019. Now you have the Red Sox just finishing off this great sweep of the Yankees. Tell me what sort of the feel among the players is right now about where you guys are at.
Yeah, I mean, obviously right now the vibe is really good. You know, I feel like at times during the season, you know, we hit well, but we didn't pitch well, or we pitched well, but we didn't hit well. And, you know, right now I feel like it's coming together as a whole. You know, like you said, in 21 with the Braves, it just came together at the right time. And I think, you know, this, it's about clicking at the right time. And you know, right now is the right time. So, you know, I'm excited to see what we can do going down the road you know, kind of putting those pieces together and playing together and playing, you know, good baseball all around. It's, you know, it's just fun. It's fun when you're playing well and, you know, hopefully we can keep this going.
So I covered the Yankees that won 4 World Series in 5 years in the late 90s. And I was amazed at how few players actually wore their championship ring. Your championship ring. Tell me, when you pull it out, do you pull it out very often?
I pull it out certain occasions. They've gotten so big, honestly, that it's like, you know,
look at me.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not really that type of person. So, you know, special events, different baseball events that I go to, you know, I'll wear it because it is cool for people to be able to see that and try it on and, you know, kind of mess around with it. So, they've become, quite the eyepiece. You know, it's a celebration. It's not really an everyday type of ring.
Who was last one for you when you got that ring? Who was a fun person to share that with for you? You know, to hand it to them, for them to feel the weight of it. You know,
Don. I think it was my dad. You know, because you know all the travel ball games and you know the long drives to Florida and you know all that. I feel like you know he's been in this just as much as I have. And so, you know, be able to share that with him was pretty cool, pretty special. And, you know, I know he was excited about the whole thing and just be able to go through that with him was pretty awesome.
All right, Adam. Well, thanks for your time and good luck with his drive.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Bleacher Tweets.
All righty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a Wednesday. Hillel Armbarn Creef writes in, mini reset for the Yankees. I know there are all three wild cards, but I really don't see this team making it to the promised land. Get what you can for Torres, Seve, Bader. There isn't much available for buyers this deadline. Maybe they can get more bang for their buck back.
Armbarn, I'm not co-signing that. I mean, as of this morning, they would make the playoffs. And did you think that the Atlanta Braves, with the worst record in the National League, were going to win the World Series in 2021? Did you think the Phillies last year Sarah Abbott's lifelong favorite team, that they were going to come within two wins of winning the World Series. No, if you got a shot to make the playoffs, you take it. And I tell you what, Carlos Rodon threw yesterday. He continues to make progress. If they can get Judge healthy, and you have Garrett Cole and Carlos Rodon and, you know, the other guys in that rotation, that lights out bullpen, which is the best in baseball so far this year, I'm taking a shot in the playoffs with that team. So no, I don't think you're selling off. Taylor, you back me up on that?
Yeah, they're not going to sell off, but I will say it really delighted me that we played Aaron Hicks' home run last night, and then you're like, the Yankees looking for a bat in the outfield.
It was not a coincidence that I structured that in that way.
I think the Yankees are paying him like $20 million too, so it's the Aaron Hicks story. We should get him on the podcast. That is an interesting turn of events for him. Let's go to David Skaggs at David Skaggs 37. He writes, and why does it feel like Acuna is the only player taking advantage of the new stolen base rules?
No, I think other players are. I just think we probably haven't talked about it enough. And the stolen base attempt rate is up. I can't remember if it's something in the range of 25% to 40% in that range. So I think there are other players who are taking advantage of it, including a guy with Oakland.
Frank Bonfig writes in, Estuary Ruiz is stealing bases at a remarkable rate this year. Is he someone Oakland could look to deal to a contender?
If I were the Athletics and my internal evaluation was this guy's an average, below average major leaguer, big picture, yes, I would definitely try to take advantage of his value because of his base running skills. He is the most dynamic base stealer in the game this year.
Dan Holland at Du Van Du writes in, have you seen an in-depth analysis on performance during the first year after signing a big contract? Are players more likely to underperform? He points to the Padres. It's human nature to temporarily lose your edge after reaching a big goal.
I have not read specifically a team in-depth analysis on this, but I can tell you it's part of the question, you know, that people wonder, okay, if you give them the big money, will it stop the player's drive? And whether it's fair or not, and only Jacoby Ellsbury knows. I know there's a general perception within the Yankees organization that he was comfortable not playing in the last years of his contract, and it drove him crazy.
Good for him, I guess. Justin Simmons at Justin Lance Sim 1 writes, and everyone talks about the shortcomings of Verlander and Scherzer, but less about the Mets' lack of organizational depth. Cohen's money can't draft and develop the depth that teams like the Rays, Dodgers, Astros, and Braves have.
That's, and Justin, you're 100% right. And Justin and I went back and forth on Twitter about this on Tuesday. Look, you know, this was the Mets' challenge as Steve took over the team. Their farm system was not in great shape. I actually think the strategy that they deployed was perfectly reasonable. You know, without that minor league depth, without that, steady pipeline of young pitching, they have tried to fill that in by signing accomplished veterans, paying a really high price. And I think there was a reasonable expectation for success. They won 101 games last year. You add Verlander coming off a Cy Young Award. You didn't give him this big, massive contract. It was like, in terms of the length of the contract, it was for a couple of years. You pay him well. I thought the strategy was good. It hasn't been executed.
Keller, does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And with the Yankees, like, there's a lot of season left. Like, you know, these guys could definitely turn it around. Like, Scherzer and Verlander can get on a roll very easily. I think the Yankees, the Yankees fans, I think, are right to be panicky. But I think the Mets fans less so. I think they should cool it a little bit.
No, I think they're right to be panicky. If you look at the standings, Taylor, as of this morning, they are six games out in the wild card, okay?
Oh, yeah,
they're like the National League's version of the Detroit Tigers in where they are in the standings. So I get why there's panic, and I do think there's a lot of reason for concern. They're 26 out of 30 teams in starter ERA.
All right. I withdraw my opinion. You schooled me there, Buster.
Okay.
R. Mayer 151 writes in, did pushing the trade deadline back to the All-Star break depress trade talks, or is it just a weak market?
Weak market, and it's because of how bad the National League and American League Central are, and the fact that all those teams, as bad as they played, as Jeff was saying, the teams like the White Sox and say, you know what, we got a shot.
Well, maybe this answers Corey Rueckert's question. He writes, in any chance the Reds use up some of their prospect capital on a Dylan Cease deal, looking likely the White Sox are dealers, but maybe not.
Maybe not. And Corey, I don't know if it's a done deal that the White Sox will sell. And the other thing too, is that I would want to know, and I have not done a deep dive on this, what's going on with Dylan Cease? You know, at the first week of the season, talked about him being in the conversation. Yeah, my guy talked about him being in the conversation for the best pitcher on the planet, and he's got an ERA over 4. You'd want to get the answers to that before you'd make that move.
Indeed. All right. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. Strong batch today. Let's make him strong again for Friday's episode.
Yeah, 100%. That's it for today. My thanks to Adam Duvall, Sarah, Jeff, Sarah, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color, something we need to fight against every single day.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.